Welcome to False Flag Weekly News, the weekly news show that's so dangerous that powerful, well-funded forces, including the B'nai B'rith Canada, the Rosa Luxemburg Forum, and many others, apparently, are dedicated to trying to push back and try to shut us down. I'm Kevin Barrett with Professor Anthony Hall of the University of Lethbridge. I'm about to head off to Klutz Day, do some talks in Toronto, Chicago and Toronto, if they let me into Canada. More on that in a moment. But meanwhile, if you want to help us keep going and push back against these forces, they have millions, if not billions. We're doing this for Chump Change. So please do donate and keep this show on the air. There are links. You can find your way to the fundraiser page here. All right. Well, speaking of Klutz Day, there are Klutz Day rallies in your city. At least we hope there are. I know there are Klutz Day rallies in Chicago and Toronto. I know there's a huge one, I think, in Tehran, and there are rallies all over the world. I'll be in Chicago. That will be later today, June 23rd, 500 West Madison Street. That's downtown Chicago at 4:30 p.m. And then tomorrow, Saturday, June 24th, I'll be in Toronto at Queen's Park at 3 p.m., where the terrorist group designated by the FBI, the Jewish Defense League, says they will be there terrorizing the people standing up to support Palestine. Tony, don't you wish you could be there?
Yes, Klutz Day, of course, is created out of the Iranian Revolution. Ayatollah Khomeini had the idea for Klutz Day in solidarity with the Palestinians, and it's become a very significant event. And the fact that it's taken so seriously and reacted against so vehemently indicates how important it is.
Well, they're completely freaking out, and that's because Palestine is winning. The war is for hearts and minds, and even as they're being decimated by white phosphorus and kids being shot down on the streets and all sorts of atrocities, the word is getting out about who's the David, who's the Goliath, who's the lovable underdog, and who's the evil bully. And as we see in the next slide, the British government, the national government, just got defeated. The local councils can do BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanctions. Another victory for Palestine.
This all had to do with pension funds and the Theresa May government passing some law that directed how pension funds had to be directed, that it couldn't be in support of BDS. A judge overturned that ruling.
All right. Well, these small victories matter. Tony, Sun Tzu says that the best way to win a war is not on the battlefield, but through the hearts and minds before preventing any actual war. And that's what we hope will happen here. Liberate Palestine, and let's try to do it with as little carnage as possible. Next slide. We're now into the pushback against me personally for talking at Klutz Day. B'nai B'rith just put out this hit piece on me. Tony, I guess you know what it feels like to be publicly smeared as a so-called Holocaust denier.
B'nai B'rith Canada is the organization that was involved in the Planted Facebook post scam, which was taken over by my university, and I was suspended last October with the momentum of this media campaign run by B'nai B'rith. Now B'nai B'rith is targeting you, Kevin. I'm also mentioned in their press release. And I noticed that they actually have in this clip here an excerpt from last week's False Flag Weekly News. And it's an indication that this truly is being monitored. And it seems that what we say here in this venue may very well end up in court proceedings and as part of a very basic consideration about what academic freedom really means.
And speaking of court proceedings, and in the next slide, I got my lawyer involved with this, and he has written to B'nai B'rith, responding to their libelous smear. It's a demand letter to retract, because of course I am not a Holocaust denier. I haven't denied any Holocaust. In fact, I haven't ever even questioned the basic facts of the official story of the 6 million gas chambers, Hitler Führer order, extermination order, Holocaust. I have not denied or even said that I don't think that's true. I've never said that. So this is this whole notion of calling me that. I mean, there are people who do question those things. And frankly, I need to study more to find out whether or not they might be right. But That's not me. If they want to ban somebody, they need to ban Jim Fetzer, as I told him on the radio the other day. And Tony, these liars, look at the next slide. The B'nai B'rith is actually telling people who write to them in support of me that I am a totally unreasonable person, that they have repeatedly tried to reach out to me and engage me in conversation about these issues. But because I'm so unreasonable and I have no desire to engage with them, that they've given up on me and they're trying to keep me out of Canada. Well, that's a total lie. I'm the one who's actually called them and tried to engage with them, and they've never returned my phone calls, never returned my emails, and they've never once contacted me to have a conversation. So this is just another shameless lie. I just can't believe these people.
And, of course, the B'nai B'rith Canada called the hate speech unit in Edmonton, Alberta on us in 2015. Your lawyer points out that the Holocaust has no standard historiographical definition. So when you call somebody this, it has a kind of juridical tone, Holocaust denier, but what is it? Has some judge decided somewhere that you are such a thing? No, somebody has an opinion that that's what they want to call us or you or me or whoever. And what does it mean? It's used as if it has this great juridical meaning. It's when it comes to denying genocide, the government of Israel to this day denies the Armenian genocide. And the Armenian genocide, of course, Turkey doesn't want to acknowledge that it was involved in a genocide, a very important genocide that inspired Raphael Lemkin to look at the subject and invent the term genocide. This denialism, of course, Israel wants to be friends with Azerbaijan. It borders on Iran. They import oil from Azerbaijan. So it's not convenient for them to acknowledge the Holocaust or the genocide of 1.5 million Armenians. And this is an official position. So this denialism, denying genocide, what about the genocide in Eastern Congo? What about the genocide of indigenous peoples in the Americas since 1492 and on and on? Should people be kept out of their jobs and kept from entering countries, for instance, by saying, oh, the Holocaust of indigenous peoples in the Americas didn't happen? Okay, go to jail, you know, lose your career, face court proceedings. Why is one type of genocide put in a totally different category than others?
That's a really good point, Tony. You know, if they crack down on so-called Armenian genocide deniers, they'd have to lock up the whole nation of Turkey, which has a totally different view, including their historians. They point out, number one, that far more than 1.5 million Muslims were murdered by the Christian genocide, or rather the nationalist genocides of the Muslims in the Balkans leading up to World War I, and that what happened with the Armenian community was in the context of the Russians occupying and massacring people in Turkey, right? You know, this was in wartime. And so these things often do happen in wartime. The bottom line, as far as I'm concerned, is to stop wars, because wars set the stage for genocides and holocausts. Unfortunately, the legend or myth or sacred story or whatever you want to call it, this religion of the official narrative of the Jewish Holocaust in World War II is being used to push the world towards more and more war, because it makes the West and the Israelis think that they're the good guys and they have to go and smash their enemies before they get smashed. So that's why it's so dangerous. It's actually the Holocaust narrative is creating more and more Holocausts every day. 30 plus million Muslims dead since 9/11 is just the most important ongoing one of all of these tragic situations. So that's why I think we need to question the official Holocaust narrative and question its sacrality and its centrality. We should stand up for the people who are debating about the facts.
And let's not forget that 60 million people died in World War II, people of many different backgrounds. And that in itself is a horrific event, a Holocaust that should be acknowledged, you know, collectively. And we should stop to try to prevent war and bring about peace and end the Holocausts and genocides happening in our time that our own governments are responsible for.
I'm sure that B'nai B'rith would deny the 32 million Muslims murdered since 9/11 figure that was given by Gideon Paglia, the Jewish Australian physician who's an expert on such matters, that would make them five times as bad Holocaust deniers as anybody who denies the 6 million figure for World War II. Let's move on to Syria. In Syria, we had a powder keg situation developing this week. We had the U.S. shooting down Syrian aircraft, and the Russians announcing that they're going to shoot down anything, including American aircraft, as we see in the next slide. We have U.S. pilots saying they're going to shoot back. They're going to defend themselves. They're going to fight. They're going to shoot down the Russians. And then we had the U.S. In Raqqa basically fighting on behalf of the Syrian rebels against the Syrian army. So this is turning into a direct U.S. war on Syria and Russia.
Well, let's remember the U.S. government is an invading force in Syria. The government of Syria doesn't accept that they can legitimately come in. Now they've come in and they are shooting down at least one Syrian airplane from within Syria. You know, there's no UN Security Council instrument of any kind to legitimize this, not even NATO. It's just an invasion of a country and a complete violation of international law, of course.
Absolutely. And now Iran is involved, too. The U.S. claims it's been shot down an Iranian drone in Syria. And Iran is the target of this. The destruction of Syria is really about paving the way for the destruction of Iran, which is why Iran is trying to maintain the stability of the current government in Syria.
Yeah, and if we can keep moving through the slides, I found particularly good the article by Brennan, DeLuce, and McCleary in Just Security. Let's keep going. And it really gets into this issue that there's a war hawk party led by Ezra Cohen Warnick and Derek Harvey in the National Security Council. And they're so anti-Iranian that they're being opposed by Mattis and others.
Let's wait till we get to that slide, Tony. We're talking about something that's not on the screen.
Well, we're talking about Iran and the situation.
Yeah, but we have to talk about what we see on the screen here. Yeah. So Iran's warning of more missile strikes. Tillerson is openly calling for regime change in Iran. It's the first administration official to officially advocate for regime change in Iran ever, you know, since the Iranian Revolution. So even though they're all unofficially advocating for it. Now let's move to it. We also see that the U.S. has been accused of being the de facto defense shield for Islamic State in Syria. That's hardly news. And here we get to the story you were talking about, Tony, the Just Security story, pointing out that Ezra Cohen Wetnick of the National Security Council and Derek Harvey, the NSC's top Mideast advisor, these are Trump White House guys, are pushing for a massive escalation of the direct U.S. war in Syria.
Yes, and this article I would suggest is the best one in this week's groupings of articles. Apparently this Ezra Cohen Wetnick, there was an effort to get him out. Bannon and Kushner want him in. So there's a war party that is more extreme within the White House than the Pentagon. And the thinking is that if they go at the Iranian-backed militia and such in Syria, this is going to have profound effects in Iraq, where the United States and Iran are actually kind of working together in Iraq to bring about a degree of stability in Iraq. And so the generals are saying, we don't want to put this situation in Iraq in danger by overreacting in Syria.
So we have the Trump White House and its national security people pushing for escalating the war, and hardline Iran hawk military officers pushing back against that escalation. So all these people who voted for Trump thinking that he was the peace candidate are really they've got egg all over their faces.
Yeah, but let's remember that Trump has always been for war with Iran, and that's one consistency.
War with Iran means war with Russia.
Well, of course, anyway, there's an obvious inconsistency there. And why can't we have peace with Russia? Why can't the President of the United States have his way? He's only the President of the United States, and the unelected people, the neocons like Cohen Wetnick, obviously run the show, and Trump is a figurehead, it seems.
Yeah, Trump is personally pushing for war with Iran, Tony, which means he's personally pushing for war with Russia, which means all this thaw with Russia crap is a bunch of BS.
Okay, let's move on.
Ah, geez, I thought we were going to have a good argument here. Okay, well, let's...
It would take time. It would take time.
That's true. Yeah, we're rushing through today. I have to leave early to go to Chicago for good stay.
Yeah, and it, as pun intended, you rushing through, guy.
Rushing through time. Okay, rushing off to Australia. How about Australia halting airstrikes in Syria after the U.S. downs the Syrian jet? So the Aussies are pulling out. They've got some common sense, but we'll see if anybody else does.
Well, isn't it interesting seeing all these slides about these stories on Syria? And it's one picture of a different type of a jet and a different type of a jet. And obviously the military industrial complex, the manufacturers of this high tech stuff designed to kill people, to mass murder people, they're having a field day in Syria. Many different militaries and companies that want to try out their stuff. Yemen, there's a question, you know, will U.S. Go into Yemen? And obviously the big game here is building up to some kind of pressure on or invasion of regime change in Iran, the country of Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Okay. ISIS or Daesh is one of the biggest tools being used against Iran and anybody who's friendly to Iran, which means anybody who wants any kind of independent, non-Zionist, non-imperial colonial entity in the Middle East. And we had the Wall Street Journal this week breaking the story about Israel supporting the so-called Syrian rebels. And of course, that means ISIS. So this is no longer a conspiracy theory that you can only see on False Flag Weekly News. It's now been confirmed by the eminent Wall Street Journal.
And of course, as ISIS is to some extent neutralized, not completely, it's sort of moved here and there. But it makes more open that the real game on the U.S. part and Israel's part is regime change in Syria is to take out the Assad government, and ISIL Daesh is a pawn used to justify various maneuvers
and they're just the latest
invading Iran.
They're just the latest form of this, Tony. In the next story, we have this great background piece from a few months ago over at Mondo Weiss, how Zionism helped create the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And these Wahhabi Takfiri terrorist types have been militarized and weaponized against Islam and against the Middle East, starting with by the British hundreds of years ago. And when the Middle East was hashed up and chopped up into bits after World War One, the Zionists, the banksters who basically controlled the United Kingdom at the time, were the ones who created Saudi Arabia. It was actually a British Foreign Office guy who created the name Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So the Saudi Wahhabi axis of evil has always been an anti-Islam mercenary outfit working on behalf of the Zionists and imperialists who were destroying the region. So there's nothing new here with ISIS. It's just the latest of this long line of Takfiri terrorist attempts to destabilize the region.
And wasn't it Kim Philby's father, Kim Philby, the famous double agent, the Soviet MI6 agent at Cambridge? It was his father who worked with Ibn Saud to put him securely in place in charge of the empire's oil reserves in Saudi Arabia.
Lots of devious people doing that kind of work. And, of course, I saw this all coming years ago, 3.5-4 years ago, when I wrote the semi-satirical piece, I wish it were just satirical, Will Israel Merge with Saudi Arabia? This was published back in 2013, and it's pretty much come true. They've virtually merged into the same entity today.
Yeah, that's what I would observe. Like, how are they any different? When are Saudi Arabia and Israel ever on a different side of any issue? It seems to me they're pretty much the same entity.
And they have the same philosophy. They both hate the people who they designate as other or different. The Saudi Wahhabis hate everybody who doesn't accept their insane misinterpretation of Islam, and then they think they have the right to kill them. And the crazed extremist Zionists hate everybody who's not a Zionist, that is the indigenous Palestinians and their supporters, and think they have a right to butcher them. So the two entities really should just merge and call themselves the Zio-Wahhabi Kingdom of Saudi Israelia.
What do you think of analysis of the likes of Wayne Madsen, who views the Saudi royal family as Jewish, essentially?
Well, he says they're Danmei Jews, and this is a sort of a satanic, heretical offshoot of Judaism. It's not normal Judaism. These are the followers of Shabtai Zvi, the false messiah who advocated systematically violating the Ten Commandments. His followers allegedly have human sacrifices, orgies, and things like that to outrage God, to force God to bring back the messianic era, to bring back the messiah. So these people are psycho, or at least some of them are. I mean, there are people who claim that some of these Dahmeh people are actually pretty normal. They don't do this stuff. I don't know. But anyway, that's the rumor. Wayne Madsen wrote about it. And it wouldn't really surprise me. It kind of does match up with what we see.
Gee, Saudi might sue you for slander there, Kevin.
Bring it on. Bring it on, Ibn Saud. Yeah. I've got a lawyer. Okay, moving on to 9/11 fallout. Speaking of the Saudis and lawyers, now it's the UAE that's being accused of 9/11. This time Qatar is saying that the United Arab Emirates supported the 9/11 attacks. So, and the victims' families are suing the Emirates, too, along with Saudi Arabia, apparently. So that's getting interesting, I guess.
Well, it's interesting watching this clip here of Donald Trump telling Qatar to back off. Let's remember that Qatar has the Al Udeid air base, a huge U.S. air base in Qatar. So there is a very important imperative of the United States to maintain some kind of friendly relationships with Qatar. But there's Trump lecturing Qatar as if it's Saudi Arabia, saying, well, you're training terrorists and you're funding terrorists and you're creating the philosophy that breeds terrorism. He's talking, Donald Trump is really talking about Saudi Arabia, which is one of the U.S. government's top allies.
That's right.
And markets for its overzealous weapons industry, could I put it that way?
And Trump even said that Saudi Arabia did 9/11 during the campaign. And actually, Qatar, with its philosophy, it's not a philosophy of terrorism like Saudi Arabia. Qatar's philosophy is one of democratic Islamism. And that's what really scares the enemies of the region, the enemies of Islam, the Zionists. The Muslim Brotherhood today is not a terrorist organization. It's primarily a democratic Islamist organization that wants to work through the constitutional democratic systems. And that terrorizes everybody who's afraid to see that the Islam rise again and come back together. So that's why Qatar is being set aside here. Sure, they've been, people from Qatar have been involved in some terrorism. They're on the wrong side in Syria, etc. But their basic philosophy is one of democratic, progressive Islamism. And that's the big threat to everybody, like Trump and the Saudis.
As I see it, the big crime of Qatar is that they want to be friendly with Iran.
Yes.
And the White House and Saudi Arabia want to isolate Iran. And so this is leading to all kinds of dominoes and effects in the supposed confederation, Gulf Confederation of Arab principalities that are supposedly obedient to their Saudi leaders. This is all a fraud and a misrepresentation, and Qatar is exposing it.
Absolutely. And Iran is the most advanced of the Islamist, call it, or, you know, Islamic democracies. Turkey is working on it, too. Iran is fully independent. And that's what scares these people. They don't want democracy in the region. They don't want independent countries. They want to destroy the region, prop up evil dictators like the thugs running Saudi Arabia, the thug running Egypt. That's what people like Trump like. Trump is another thug just like those guys. All these I better shut up or I'm going to be off to Guantanamo. Let's move on to the next one. Alex Baldwin. He's got a Hulu 9/11 drama, The Looming Tower, about 9/11 based on Lawrence Wright's Pulitzer Prize winning book about how 9/11 was done by the FBI and CIA. I mean, no, it was done because the FBI and CIA were fighting and they couldn't get together to stop Al-Qaeda. Can't make it up.
Well, apparently Alex Baldwin has hosted Saturday Night Live 17 times, and he seems to have the lead impersonation of Donald Trump. And suddenly he is really a rock star. Saturday Night Live comes out of Toronto, where I grew up, and it was largely Canadians who established it. It's interesting how easily we can go between, you know, actual wars on the ground with soldiers and jets and such, and what's going on in Hollywood in the representation of our world. And the two really do converge. The two are different aspects of the same culture of war, political economy of war, which is engulfing us, which is overwhelming us, which is removing our future generations' possibilities of having a decent life.
Absolutely. And as far as I'm concerned, Alex Baldwin and everybody involved in these war propaganda productions propping up the official version of 9/11, all these people are war criminals and need to be tried and sentenced as such. And speaking of...
They have to go and hang out with Noam Chomsky. And
yeah, hang out is the right word.
And meet together and conspire together to destroy our world.
And speaking of traitors and war criminals, how about Larry Silverstein? He's now being sued. Well, it's not just him, really. It's his architectural firm that's being sued for plagiarism. The second lawsuit claiming that the new Tower One was plagiarized. So I guess Silverstein, along with being a mass murdering war criminal and traitor, is also perhaps a plagiarist.
Ji Hoon Park comes forward and says, hey, I designed that building. It looks like what I designed, the One World Trade Center. Oh, my gosh, the bad karma is starting to set in.
But, you know, we don't want to judge anybody before they've had their day in court. So I'm going to say, you know, let's wait and see whether Larry Silverstein is really a plagiarist. But I think we'd be pretty sure he's a mass murdering traitor. So whether or not he gets 6 months added to his sentence for plagiarism, we'll just have to wait and find out later. Moving on to Minnesota.
Those are strong words, Kevin Barrett.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm getting revved up for Coots Day. I can't wait to stand up there on Coots Day and say stuff that's going to really piss off the Zionists so they can put out a few more hit pieces on me, a few more libelous slanders. This is what I live for. Moving on to Minnesota, Philando Castile, the black man who was shot dead by a psychotic police officer named Geronimo Yanez. At least I hope he's psychotic, but if he was in his right mind, that guy also deserves. Anyway, this is so ridiculous, Tony. These cops just shoot people down and never face any consequences for it in the United States. As John Whitehead points out in the next slide over at the Rutherford Institute, this is par for the course. What happened to Philando Castile happens to people every day practically in the United States. What is the percentage of 1 in 13 people killed by guns, and we have massacres of people killed by guns in the United States, 1 in 13 are killed by police gunfire. These are the people supposed to be protecting us. They're paid to protect us. It's a scandal. Tony, are the cops that evil in Canada?
Well, we're moving in that direction. We'll see how they treat you when you're in Queen's Park. God save our gracious Queen. Welcome to Canada, or too bad you can't get into Canada. It remains to be seen. We're all hanging on the edges of our seats to wait to see what happens. But this article by John W. Whitehead in the Rutherford Institute, it's a serious article. It's a Second Amendment article. It really discusses gun issues, gun control issues, the overwhelming armament of the state, of police, of military. And the fact that although gun possession is legal in the United States, puts you in an awkward position. Sometimes you lose your life, as Philando Castile did when he indicated he had a gun, although he had a permit for it. And this really points out the hypocrisy of the U.S. system, which says that they respect this right. And, of course, why is this right? I always used to think it was a bit of a fraud, but the idea that the citizenry need to be equipped to deal with an oppressive government which may try to oppress them, this scenario no longer seems to me to be quite as outrageous as I thought it was when I was younger and more naive.
So you're a recovering liberal.
Well, I don't know. I haven't really recovered yet, but
I'm trying to balance
different interpretations that are coming my way.
Okay, well, another front on the war on freedom is the encryption issue, and the EU Parliament just actually did something pretty positive, at least in my view here. They want end-to-end encryption on everything, and they're basically calling for maybe a slightly watered-down version of what Edward Snowden has been calling for. And this is really important, Tony. You know, Snowden, whatever you may think about some of the issues that he's been involved in, he has a really good point that it would be possible to retool the architecture of the Internet and the devices we use to make total privacy just the de facto norm. Everybody would have it. It could be built into the system. And, of course, the bad guys don't want that. The commercial interests don't want that. They want to spy on you so they know what you're looking at on the web so they can try to sell you crap. And frankly, Tony, you know, I'm – it's, I have these terrorist fantasies sometimes, like this guy deserves some terrible fate, you know? And when I have those, I have more of those fantasies about those bastards who are spying on what I'm browsing at on the internet and then putting up advertisements trying to sell me garbage based on what they think that I'm interested in. Those are the people that really deserve to have ISIS storm into their CEO offices and chop off their heads. Call me a terrorist.
Yeah, and of course, having access to people's private information on the internet puts one in a huge position of advantage, maybe to, for instance, exploit the stock market or this or that. So whoever gets that clearance is in a disproportionately powerful position. And then we're told, oh, we can't do this encryption because we need to be able to identify the terrorists. Oh, yes. Like, for instance, Australia Witness, who is actually Joshua Goldberg, who was arrested for what he was putting on the internet. And it turns out as you look into these internet jihadists, you turn up a whole, you pull up the rocks and you find the slugs and then they're the usual suspects and it's not what it seems at all. Australia Witness, Joshua Goldberg, look up hate speech deceptions by Anthony J. Hall.
Okay, and our regular viewers know something about that outrage, the supposed extremist ISIS-supporting terrorist, the notorious Australia Witness, turns out to be the Jewish guy in Florida running all kinds of scams, including getting you suspended from your university. What an amazing story.
Who's also a Joshua Bornstein, who's also a Michael Slay, the supposed white supremacist Nazi. Yeah. Who's also Ben Garrison, who's this planted toxic Facebook post, engineered toxic Facebook post, gets planted on my page, and now I'm suspended at the University of Lethbridge, and Ben Abrith is coming at you full force to try to keep you out of Canada, and to heck with the laws of Canada. Hey, Ben Abrith, are they the real government of Canada?
Yeah, these people don't care about the law. They don't care about truth. They're just interested in power, and they're using their money to try to bully their way into more and more power. And then they're trying to terrorize their own Jewish community by scaring them about really scary people like us, I guess. They must be really desperate if, like, we're the scariest people they can find.
They're working in close consultation with the Joshua Goldberg conglomerate, and which produces this kind of hate speech incitement. And that's what it seems they're experts in, pointing hate speech at the likes of you, for instance.
All right. Well, I don't know if I'm going to be charged with hate speech for saying that this is a complete outrage, but the Supreme Court in the U.S., as we see in the next slide, has ruled that U.S. officials such as John Ashcroft and Robert Mueller can violate the Constitution with complete impunity, at least as long as the victims are Muslim. This is what we found in this Supreme Court ruling involving these horrific roundups and tortures of a couple thousand people. They were virtually all Muslims except for the dancing Israelis who actually did 9/11. And they were, of course, quickly sent back to Israel. So it's fine to just sweep up 2,000 people based on their ethnicity and torture them all, even though they're all completely innocent. You have not the slightest shred of evidence against any of them, as long as you're doing this to Muslims. But, you know, this kind of stuff could be done to other people as well. Anyway, it's obviously a complete outrage. It's the outrage of the week, as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, isn't Robert Mueller the chap who is leading the investigation of Donald Trump and his dastardly Russian connections? Robert Mueller the one saying, hey, Donald Trump, you might have violated the Constitution of the United States and the supreme laws of the United States? Robert Mueller gets a pass so he can act in contradiction to the type of lenience that is shown to his violations of the law.
And so this ruling says it's basically okay to just round up thousands and thousands of Muslims because that you imagine that this Zionist attack on the Twin Towers and the Pentagon was done by Muslims, even though you've arrested the guys, some of the guys who did it, the dancing Israelis on the very day, and you've arrested the guys who were trying to blow up the bridges and tunnels with vans full of explosives who were all Israelis on the same day. It's fine to just accept because the media, which is owned by Zionists, said that Muslims had something to do with this. You can round up thousands of Muslims and torture them. Well, in the next slide, we see that the same thing could happen on a much larger scale. The right wing is calling for internment camps for Muslims. Major voices in Germany, the U.S., Fox News is all over this, basically featuring people calling for a final solution. That's the direct quote from Katie Hopkins for the Muslim problem. So this is getting way out of hand, Tony. Gordon Duff, editor of Veterans Today, says all Muslims need to immediately get high-powered military-grade weaponry and get trained to use it. And frankly, I think he may have a point.
Well, these internment camps, let's think about, for instance, Camp Baqa in Iraq, where supposedly ISIL or ISIS got its start. People inside these prisons, we're told, make all kind of connections. And if the mythology was true about ISIL, then that would be, you know, something we could look at. But we know for sure these internment camps are places where people are investigated psychologically analyzed. People, you know, the authorities are looking for patsies. They're looking for assets. They're looking for people who might be psychotic and can be directed to do violent acts. These camps, you know, aren't for rehabilitation. They are for the deep state to identify people, you know, talent that they might be able to mold to their uses and their commission of false flag terrorism and such. That's what goes on in these camps. That's what Guantanamo Bay was and is about.
Indeed. And so Muslims, of course, have to live in fear that their Zionist enemies are going to blow something up any day, leading to mass internments. But they're already living in fear every day, according to this story in the IB Times of the UK. Every time there's one of these false flags, dozens and dozens of Muslim women get attacked and harassed and beat up. You know, mosques are attacked and so on. None of it ever gets reported.
And, of course, women tend to be particularly vulnerable to this Islamophobia and things like having acid sprayed in their face because they're more visible because of the Islamic dress, which is more visible with women. There's Jeremy Corbyn addressing this tragedy at the mosque at Finsbury Park. There he is speaking about it in a very thoughtful way, as he usually does. And where are the other politicians? Where are the other people who want public approval, seeking photo opportunities? Are they getting themselves photographed beside mosques, pointing to the horrific plague of Islamophobia, which is largely generated by the Islamic phobia industry run by the likes of Site Intelligence and Rita Katz? And we keep talking about that particular example of how this imagery of Islamic terror is engineered and developed in order to poison people's minds against that sector of the human family.
And so when it's reported that some crazy Muslim has run over some people with a car, that's supposedly terrorism. But if a crazy anti-Muslim runs over some Muslims with a car, that's not terrorism. And that's led to this debate about what's terrorism. Apparently, if a Muslim can be blamed for something, even if it was actually done by Zionists and covert operatives, then that's terrorism. And if anything is done ever by a non-Muslim, it's just a disturbed loner.
This is really the great issue of our time, Kevin. This replacement of Muslims, the replacement of the Cold War enemy, which disappeared with the demise of the Soviet Union. The military-industrial complex state needed a new enemy. And 9/11 was the key to opening up this demonization of Muslims, not to say that there are not, you know, psychotic Muslims and people who have all kinds of, you know, complex motivations like every other group. But this particular situation that we're in, those individuals within the Islamic world are sought after, are treated as assets, are cultivated and developed, and their violent tendencies are exploited and used in this demonic psychological operation that we try to identify and is such a vital, important subject. It's tragic when you see 9/11 truthers buying into Islamophobia. And why was 9/11 done?
Right. like Alex Jones, who's actually directly responsible, I think, or can be held so, for the next death in the next story we have, the 17-year-old Muslim girl murdered after she left a mosque in Virginia. But we're reassured by the authorities, of course, that it's not terrorism. Well, that probably makes her family feel a lot better, doesn't it?
It's a very sad story.
And next story, would a white British community have burned in Grenfell Tower? That tower was full of Muslims. It was full of people from Moroccan and Somali backgrounds. And it looks like there's a gentrification effort. The big real estate interests are gentrifying that area. They wanted that tower gone. They wanted those people gone. And it just happened to burn down. New York Times didn't mention that part, but it did point out that there's all this BS spread by genocidal war criminals like Alex Jones and a whole lot of other people about supposed no-go areas in London, which is complete bullshit. I've walked through all of these, or many of these so-called no-go areas, or the Muslim ghettos of London. I was going from mosque to mosque giving information about a 9/11 event there several years ago. There's no such thing as a no-go zone anywhere in Europe. It's complete BS. The people spreading these lies are war criminals and need to be tried, convicted, and imprisoned.
Well, I think it would be wrong to take Alex Jones lightly or underestimate him. I think he's a very brilliant person. I think his analysis, as wrong as it might be, he strings together ideas on the spur of the moment in a very creative way. Alex Jones, I see.
32 million people are dead, Tony, because of people like Alex Jones.
Hear me out here. I see Alex Jones as essentially the warm-up act for Donald Trump, the presidency of Donald Trump.
Exactly.
And it's true that he has engaged in a kind of info wars, and he has won. He is the kind of mouthpiece for the Islamophobic government of the current U.S. president. And of course, he has this history that he is the person who publicized, 9/11 was an inside job. That begs the question, well, inside what? We need to watch Alex Jones very closely, and I just think throwing at him, verbiage that just is completely, some people have to be taken seriously, and I think we should take him seriously, and I agree with your analysis of the fact that he disseminates lies and disinformation and feeds and thrives on building up this hatred towards Muslims, which is
it makes 9/11 truth look stupid. He's the ugly, bloated face of 9/11 truth. He's hideous. I don't want to look at him closely, Tony, any more than I want to look closely at a cocktail with a human toe floating in it. And that brings us to our last story of the day. There is a toe missing from the downtown hotel in Dawson City. This is our Meanwhile in Canada story, Tony. And you Canadians are pretty weird. You people are pretty strange. This hotel has lost its toe. Somebody stole the toe. It's a toe, human toe, that they serve with whiskey in what they call the sour toe cocktail. So all I can say is thank God I'm a Muslim, because it is haram to drink alcohol or to consume human toes. And ISIS apparently doesn't know that. They chew on people's livers, but they're not Muslims anyway. Tony, you want to go to Dawson City and check this out?
Well, apparently this toe came in the form of a drink with champagne. Then they decided, no, they'll just have the same toe and put it in different drinks, and you can have whatever alcoholic beverage you want with this toe. But the deal is you have to touch the toe to your lips. And although they may have lost this one toe, apparently this individual here who invented the drink is getting toes sent to him now from other locations. And people lose their foot and whatnot.
That's heartwarming.
So he may have lost one toe, but one toe gone, another toe gained, I guess.
They say drink it fast or drink it slow, but your lips must touch the toe. Well, my lips are never going to touch that toe. Alhamdulillah. This is False Flag Weekly News. I'm Kevin Barrett, heading off to the Coots Day festivities in Chicago and Toronto. Toronto, I should say, inshallah. So, hey, good job, Tony. Thank you, and thank you all to our supporters who are keeping False Flag Weekly News alive. See you next week, God willing.
God willing.